The following program comes to you as part of the Africa Health Network, a service of the Voice of America to our audience throughout the African continent.
Good evening, everyone. This is the Voice of America in Washington, and welcome to Health Chat. I'm Douglas Impuga, sitting in for Lenoir Mudu. Cardiovascular disease is caused by disorders of the heart and blood vessels. These diseases are the number one cause of death globally. More people die annually from these diseases than from any other cause. Tonight we'll discuss the causes, prevention and treatment of cardiovascular disease. And joining us via phone from Atlanta is Dr. Fleetwood Laslap. He is a researcher at CDC's Division for Heart Disease and Stroke Prevention. Doctor, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Douglas.
You're welcome. We'll start our discussion in a moment, but first, here is an overview.
Women are more likely than ever to suffer from heart disease today, according to cardiologist Matthew Badoff.
They're actually at increased risk of heart disease, partly because they live longer. And so as they get older, they're more likely to develop high blood pressure, diabetes, and their cholesterol goes up. A lot of these issues are not addressed with their primary care physician as diligently as men.
The first step toward fighting the disease among women, Badoff says, is dispelling the misconceptions about it, such as that heart disease only affects men.
The heart attack rate actually now is higher in women than in men in the United States. More women die of heart attack, more women die of stroke, and more women die of heart failure than men every year in the United States. So it's really a female-predominant disease at this point.
Another misconception, he says, is that breast cancer is women's number one health concern.
Breast cancer is a very important disease for women and a big health concern. Approximately 5 to 1 of those women will die of heart disease rather than breast cancer. So heart disease is a much bigger killer of women in our society than breast cancer.
Separating facts from fiction, Badoff says, can help women make better health decisions.
Women have to make sure that they're not only getting their mammograms and self-breast exams, but that they're also finding out about their heart health. I highly recommend that women know their numbers, know their blood pressure and their cholesterol, and after menopause, consider a heart scan to see if they have any plaque building up in their coronary arteries.
To help prevent heart disease, registered dietitian Carrie Glassman encourages women to re-examine their lifestyle and take baby steps to make it healthier.
They're really focusing on women making small changes and building on them to improve their overall lifestyle. We can modify many things to our daily lifestyle. We can improve our weight. We can reduce the amount of sodium we're consuming. We can incorporate more fiber and more omega-3s into our diet.
Natural health care provider Bob DeMaria, who's known as Dr. Bob, agrees that taking care of your overall health can improve heart health.
You may or may not know, but the blood flows from your feet, up your legs, through your liver, which is on the right side of your body, on the way to the heart. When you have constipation, it puts stress on the liver. And then if the liver is not functioning optimally, it'll affect the kidneys. Well, when the kidneys are congested, it's going to affect your blood pressure. It affects the flow of blood to the heart.
He advises his patients, especially women, to take a holistic and organic approach to staying healthy.
If I was a female today, I would definitely exercise regularly. I would eat as much fresh vegetables that I could, raw, steamed, or sautéed. The fruit I would eat would be pears, plums, and apples. I would use sea salt. I would focus on gluten-free wheat products. I would drink water from a pure source. I would use animal tissue, including lamb or chicken. Organic would be the best. Deep ocean fish, not farm-raised fish. I would have B vitamins. B vitamins are important for sending electrical impulses along nerves. I would not drink soda. I would avoid pastries. Avoid all processed food, especially the fake sweeteners. I would not eat any deep-fried foods. I would saute in olive oil. I would use flax oil, and I think this is something that's really significant.
Dr. Bob and other health advocates say it's also crucial for women to quit smoking and find creative ways to reduce their stress levels. Finding love and friendship can also help women enjoy a happier life with healthier hearts. I'm Faith Lapidus.
Now, doctor, let's first begin from the beginning. When we talk of cardiovascular disease, what exactly do we mean by that?
Well, Douglas, it can mean a host of things and is really related to several types or conditions that affect the heart and blood vessels, and is many times more commonly referred to heart disease or stroke.
I see. And this must be a cluster of diseases, I believe.
You're correct, Douglas. It is a cluster of diseases. It can be a number of different types of things as well, and has a lot of risk factors that are well known that we could talk about that are modifiable, which means that we can do things about, and some that we can't do anything about, unfortunately.
And in this group is most primarily people, when they hear of this cardiovascular disease, they think of heart disease. Is that correct?
Yes, heart disease is one of the primary conditions of cardiovascular disease. And so many times people refer to heart disease or even relate it to heart attacks or even myocardial infarctions or heart attacks is commonly known. And there are a number of different types of strokes as well that can occur. And they have different symptoms that come on that could be recognized, but then other times they have symptoms that are not recognized. So regular contact with healthcare providers is important to identify it early in your life.
So you mentioned there are symptoms. What are the common symptoms?
Well, because cardiovascular disease is so broad,
yes,
the symptoms are usually related to the particular conditions and or risk factors. And many times, like I mentioned, that the symptoms are even silent. We have things that are referred to as silent killers within cardiovascular disease, particularly hypertension or high blood pressure and stroke. But common symptoms for things like heart attack, pressure in the chest, shooting pain down the arm, those may differ from women and women and men, but they are fairly common symptoms. For a stroke in particular, there may be some numbness in the face, trouble speaking or understanding speech, and even drooping in the eye or shortness of breath as well.
So is it true, because most people believe women are more likely to suffer from these diseases? Is that a correct assumption? Or
heart disease is the number one killer in the U.S. That's for both men and women. And so both genders need to be aware of the risk factors, their history, and other related factors as well, equally.
What are the causes, the main causes? Because how would one guard against getting these diseases?
Well, that's the great thing, Douglas, is the risk factors for heart disease are really well known and well founded in research that we do here at CDC and research that's done around the world for cardiovascular disease. And like I mentioned before, there are ones that are modifiable, which means that you can do things about those. In particular, for heart disease, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, smoking, being overweight or obese, having diabetes, a poor diet or physical inactivity are really those primary modifiable risk factors. So that's usually what we target with our prevention programs and others. When I mention non-modifiable, it's things like family history or age. Unfortunately, we can't do much about either. But there is such an emphasis on the modifiable risk factors, and they can make such a difference and impact in people's lives, that targeting programs for those particular areas can really help to improve the cardiovascular health of the nation.
How successful has CDC, because you operate not only here in the United States but all over the world, how successful have you been in sensitizing the people about the causes and how to guard against them?
A lot of the work that's done here related to the tracking of heart disease and then programmatic interventions and evidence-based interventions that we do here in the U.S. Applies to other settings as well throughout the world. For example, a lot of our work in hypertension or high blood pressure focuses on the health system, trying to make improvements within health systems to better care for individuals, to better identify those individuals, to get them on the appropriate treatment, and to maintain those people on appropriate treatment if needed. And that directly applies to many of our partners in other countries as well, and we've tried to integrate those in our relationships with those partners abroad.
Apart from gender, because you say both men and women suffer from these diseases, how about age? Is age a factor?
Absolutely, Douglas. Yeah, as we get older, we have more risk for these types of risk factors for cardiovascular disease and for heart disease and stroke, in particular heart attacks and strokes. We do want to have early intervention for these. And so those who are young and may not even feel like they are sick or ill still need to have regular checkups with their healthcare providers in order to be screened for the risk factors for heart disease. And screening is very easy. You know, a blood pressure check at the healthcare provider's office, a cholesterol check through the blood, smoking, counseling as well if that's needed. And having those interventions early in somebody's life can help with the risk for heart disease later in life.
You mentioned early intervention and screening for these diseases. What's the safe period, safe intervals for checking of these? Because as you mentioned, there are many symptoms that can be detected, cholesterol and all that. Or what's the safe period, regular period, so one should have tests?
Yeah, so each of the different risk factors use a national guidelines for the time periods that one would need to have those screenings. And so the healthcare providers across the U.S. Regularly use those guidelines in the screening when people come to the clinics. And so the most important point to that is not to have people know or remember each of the different age cut points of when I need to get this checked and that checked. The most important factor is the regular interaction with the healthcare provider, because those providers will be using the evidence-based guidelines and know when somebody would need to be screened based on their family history or other risk factors that all come into play when you're considering treatment for or the prevention of certain risk factors for heart disease.
People have, I don't know whether it's true or not, have said these diseases are diseases of lifestyle. Does social status matter in who gets this disease, or that's an erroneous assumption?
Well, there are many risk factors for cardiovascular disease, and we have seen that those of lower socioeconomic status have an increased risk in some areas for particular risk factors. But we have seen the other side of that as well, is that the prevention of these diseases across different geographic settings in the U.S., across different health systems as well, can be accomplished through the effective intervention of screening and treatment of these risk factors. So while it does come into play, it's not a barrier that cannot be overcome for these risk factor treatments.
But in other words, is there a geographical distribution of where the burden is heavier in some areas than others?
Yes, there's geographic patterns to cardiovascular disease. Many times the southern portion of the U.S. is referred to as the stroke belt or other areas, and if you look for risk factor burden within the U.S., certain parts of the country, regions of the country, even U.S. states, have higher burden of particular risk factors, whether it be diabetes, high blood pressure, hypertension, or high cholesterol. And so we do use, at CDC, we have a number of different systems as well that we use for what we call surveillance of health conditions. And so we have regular surveys that are conducted by telephone and in person. We use many data sets from health systems and insurance claim data as well to try to better understand the burden of disease throughout the country. And so we're able to utilize that data in our programs and our interventions that we have at CDC. And so most of the funding that we have here at CDC comes to us and then is pushed out to our partners, state partners, local partners as well, to try to improve the cardiovascular health of the nation. And so we're using these large systems of surveillance and disease tracking to help better target and focus our interventions throughout the country.
And what would you attribute to that, that pattern of the spread of the disease?
Yeah, some of it could be very well lifestyle, social factors that are contributing to that. Some of it could be the genetic components of those populations as well in certain geographic regions. But we have seen the improvements across those geographic regions in the better treatment of the health, primary risk factors for cardiovascular disease. So we recognize that there are areas with increased burden. But even within those areas of increased burden, we've seen progress and promise of improved health in certain areas. And yet we still have challenges in others. Things like diabetes and obesity are still extreme challenges in the U.S. for cardiovascular disease. So while we have made significant improvements in other areas, we are still addressing and combating with other partners here at CDC diabetes and obesity to continue to try to limit the burden of cardiovascular disease.
I see. Now, well, we'll take a short break and we'll continue our discussion of cardiovascular diseases in a moment.
The battle against Ebola does not end when a patient survives the virus. I am Dr. Conde Greaves. Many survivors return home to their villages only to face stigma based on fear and ignorance. We must fight against stigma and welcome Ebola survivors back into our communities. They are no longer contagious and pose no threat to you. Thousands of orphan children also need your support. Imagine losing your mother and father to Ebola. Their tragedy is often compounded by rejection and isolation when they return home. This is wrong. They are not sick. We must welcome orphan children back into our communities. They have suffered enough. We must also respect our healthcare workers. Many have given their own lives so that others may have a fighting chance. Learn the facts about Ebola. Knowledge is life.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late, tonight's topic on Health Chat is cardiovascular disease. And joining us via phone is Dr. Fleetwood Lostout, a researcher in CDC's Division for Heart Disease and Stroke Prevention. Now, Doctor, we mentioned, we have talked about how the symptoms and how to avoid them. Let's talk about a treatment. These are treatable, right?
Yes, correct, Douglas. Many of the conditions are very treatable.
And briefly, what are the type of treatments that are available?
Well, as we talked about before as well, you know, cardiovascular disease is a broad area that includes many different types of conditions and risk factors. So it could be that the treatment is specific to, like if it's a heart attack, it's specific to a heart attack within an emergency room or within a hospital setting. If it's a stroke, it could be the early intervention and treatment by the emergency medical team that's showing up on site, the treatment that's in the emergency department, and then the follow-up treatment as well as they transition out of the hospital system. But many times when we talk about treatment, it's really focused on the primary risk factors for heart disease. So when I say those as well, I'm talking about, of course, high blood pressure, hypertension, high cholesterol in particular. And the treatment for those are readily available. The medications are low cost, and the treatments are very effective as well. And when you are on treatment for the risk factors, these primary risk factors for heart disease, they require regular interaction with the healthcare provider or healthcare systems in order to make sure that you're on the appropriate treatment. So it's not just potentially one medication that's needed to be treated, but it may be multiple medications that's needed to be treated in conjunction with lifestyle interventions. So it's a partnership of both. It's lifestyle interventions where there's dietary changes potentially, improvements in physical activity, moderation in alcohol intake, and then potentially many people have to be on medication therapy to help control their conditions or their risk factors related to heart disease.
Some of these diseases, we got questions from our listeners like diabetes, high blood pressure. Some people have a feeling that they can only be contained. Are they curable?
The curable is not as much as able to be treated. So they are able to be treated for that. So somebody could have high blood pressure. Let's use that as an example because it's so prevalent within our population. About 50 million people in the U.S. have high blood pressure, and yet about half of those don't even have it under control. So we have a great opportunity within that to improve control within the country. So let's just target that in particular. So if you're diagnosed at the healthcare provider's office with high blood pressure after multiple tests, they'll first start lifestyle interventions many times, things like improvements in dietary factors, maybe it's reduction in your sodium intake, which many times comes from processed or packaged foods in the U.S., or it's reduction of your weight potentially. Many times people can actually have significant improvements in their blood pressure levels by doing lifestyle interventions. And some people can even have a normal blood pressure after making those changes to their lifestyle. If over a certain period of time people do not have a blood pressure that comes to a level that they would consider below hypertension or below high blood pressure, then certain people have to be placed on treatment for that particular condition. And so curable is not really is into play as much as making the lifestyle changes can actually reduce your blood pressure and reduce the chance of you having to take medications for high blood pressure. But if you do have to take medications in the end for high blood pressure, the treatment is very effective. There are many medications with a limited amount of side effects that are low cost that are regularly and widely available here in the U.S. and throughout the world that can control your blood pressure. And while we focus and target really high blood pressure in particular as we talk about cardiovascular disease, is that improvements in blood pressure in particular can have great benefits in the long run related to your risk for heart attacks or strokes. And so early intervention, early treatment, and then maintaining that blood pressure at a good, appropriate level is important throughout life.
So what if I hear you correctly, these are treatments that take a long time and together with lifestyle interventions. How affordable are the drugs for this treatment?
It again goes back to the different disease conditions or risk factors. So some of the treatments may be ones that are a bit more high cost as they're more unique conditions or inpatient settings or early interventions. Many of the risk factors, though, that are being treated for heart disease, like high blood pressure, high cholesterol in particular, they have low-cost medications that are widely available for those. And so you can be treated on an annual basis at a really low cost overall for those particular risk factors and health conditions.
From your data, over 80% of the world's deaths from cardiovascular disease occur in low and middle-income countries. Is this a development issue where low and middle-income countries or societies have a heavier burden?
We have many programs as well that are going on throughout the world looking at the different ways cardiovascular disease is affecting different countries. And so obviously in the U.S., a developed country, many of the risk factors are related to lifestyles. In particular, we could use the sodium consumption as an example. So increased sodium consumption is related to increases in blood pressure over time, which is related to an increased risk for heart disease or strokes down the road. Here in the U.S., we have very high levels of sodium consumption coming from packaged or processed foods. When we look at other partnerships throughout the world, the sodium consumption may not be coming from the intake of processed or packaged foods, but from salt added at the table or during cooking. So the intervention points throughout the world may be slightly different within that particular area. But others, like high blood pressure, we've seen increasing levels of high blood pressure in developing countries, and many of our conversations have been related to early intervention with lifestyle changes, the diet changes, the physical activity, the reduction in alcohol intake, and also related to the increased availability of these low-cost medications as well to help with early treatment to hopefully prevent a growing burden of cardiovascular disease throughout the world.
In a nutshell, what are the steps societies or people can take to reduce the burden of this disease?
So there are many different things that people can do, and they're on different levels. And so from the society or national level, we have many programs that are going on within health systems or within even the government structure looking at trying to reduce the amount of sodium that's consumed across the population or improving blood pressure control across large health systems. But, that's not at the individual level. Those are just things that we have going on that we're trying to help improve the health of the nation. From an individual standpoint, from a listener standpoint, it's those lifestyle modifications that are the most important. And so knowing what your blood pressure level is, knowing your cholesterol level, and then if you have to have treatment for those, to start lifestyle modifications early, and if you need medication therapy, to take that medication on a regular basis. The other things that people can do are lose weight, possibly related to their, that may possibly be related to their high blood pressure. Screening for diabetes is another thing that people can do, especially if they have a family history of diabetes. Regular physical activity. So physical activity, from just talking about that for a second, the current recommendations are for people to have 150 minutes of physical activity throughout the week. And that can come in many different forms. That could come from somebody doing just brisk walking with a friend or neighbor. It could come with somebody playing tennis or running, exercising, from swimming in different areas. But, you know, the most common form of physical activity in the U.S. is walking. And that does have very positive health benefits. Even if somebody is inactive or not doing any activity, just some activity can have a very positive health benefit overall and start to lead somebody down the road of having an improved cardiovascular health overall.
I see.
We try to promote especially physical activity and diet areas to really help with the prevention of cardiovascular disease overall.
That's at an individual level. Is there anything that can be done at an institution or a government level to prevent or for early detection of this disease?
Yeah, that's a number of different things that we have going on from a broader level. And I'll give you an example of a couple of programs that we have as well at CDC. So our partners at CDC are state health departments. And through those partnerships primarily, we also have other partnerships through local and community health departments and other nonprofit organizations. But through our state health departments, we have a number of programs that are trying to improve the cardiovascular health of their communities and populations that they serve. And they target many times the primary risk factors for heart disease. And so we charge them with that, and in partnership with that local health department or public health agency, we focus on these primary things, and we many times call them the ABCs as well. And so appropriate aspirin therapy for those that are in need, blood pressure control, cholesterol management, and smoking cessation. And by targeting those primary risk factors, we've seen the greatest population-level benefit related to cardiovascular health. Many things can be done for cardiovascular disease, but you can't do everything. So we try to target things that have the greatest impact on the population. So while we do those in partnership that are more broad-scale interventions, that doesn't take away from an individual's ability to change their course or their where they're headed with their cardiovascular health. And so doing those lifestyle interventions, adhering to those, and possibly even in partnership with others that are friends or within their family to help with accountability and encouragement, especially things like walking, which is really challenging to do on your own on a cold morning. But having somebody that's encouraging you to get up and do those types of activities are very important. And then making changes in a diet is many times challenging, especially within a family structure where different people are on different diets. And so having buy-in from the family as well to the improvement in health is very important and will help to improve the family structure's overall health and reduce the risk for things like diabetes, hypertension, and high cholesterol.
I see. Well, that's all the time we have for this edition of Health Touch. Thank you, Dr. Fleetwood Lastalut, a researcher in CDC's Division for Heart Disease and Stroke Prevention. Thank you very much, Doctor, for joining us tonight.
Yes, thanks for having me, Douglas.
You're welcome. For more on cardiovascular diseases, log on to our website at voanews.com/health. Thank you all for joining us tonight, and thanks a lot to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for covering Health Chat. I'm your host, Douglas Mpuga, in Washington. Until next time, have a good evening, and please try to stay healthy.